Welcome to For Love and Music with Tara Joseph, as she explores the ever-changing music industry with today's top creatives, artists, and executives. Enjoy these fun and informative conversations with a little bit of love thrown in along the way.
Welcome to For Love and Music with me, Tara Joseph. Now, hoping you're all staying healthy and safe during these unprecedented times, but to brighten everyone's day, let's welcome to the show my special guest, Emmy-nominated film and TV composer, Hallie Cawthery. Hallie, hi, how are you?
I'm okay. How are you doing, Sarah?
I'm okay. How are you hanging on in there?
Oh, you know, I mean, not too bad, all things considered. You know, my hair is longer than it's been since about 1995. But, but you know, apart from that, I suppose we're managing as best we can. Still in isolation.
Still in isolation. I mean, things have started to open up. But as you and I were just saying before we started actually the proper chat, okay, it doesn't really fill you with much confidence to go out right now, right?
Not a great deal. No,
I agree.
We feel just about okay about going for walks around neighborhood, our block, you know.
Yeah.
But beyond that, I'm not sure. I mean, things are opening up, but it doesn't yet feel that it's particularly safe to be doing so.
Nothing's changed.
No.
Nothing's changed. I actually went to a cafe last week to meet my mother-in-law. And by the time I sort of disinfected the cutlery and wiped round the glass and taken my mask on and off 100 times, it was lovely to see her, but it was a very unrelaxing experience. Yes, but maybe I'm just overly paranoid. I don't know.
No, I'm with you on that. Yeah, we take the same view here. And we're being especially careful because we had our first child in December. And so,
right. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Boy or girl?
It's a boy.
And what's his name?
His name is Conrad.
Oh, lovely.
Yes. He's just turned 6 months.
And can you tell if he's already sort of musical in any way or not yet?
Well, he does respond to music, but I'm not sure. It's hard to tell so far whether he's actually responding just because there are sounds.
Yeah. Well, listen,
I'm going to be keeping a close eye on
Okay. I want to know. He'll have to be a guest one day on the show.
Yes. <yeah. laughs>
But listen, so take us back to the beginning. Now, obviously, you're British, as am I. So tell us your journey. So you originate from the UK. How did you end up in LA?
Oh, well, I was living in London. This is just after finishing my postgraduate studies. And I was working as a sort of jobbing musician. My initial study was classical violin, so I was playing in orchestras around London and doing a lot of teaching. And I was writing music, but not film music. I was you know, writing music for the concert hall as and when I could in my spare time. And I got to a point where I suppose, I don't know whether I would call it it wasn't anything as serious as a crisis, but it was a sort of moment of where I maybe call it career drift. And I thought to myself, well, I could continue doing this, but if I really want to write music for a living, then I want to try and see if I can get into film and TV. And sort of asked myself, well, who do I know that I could speak to? The obvious name was Harry Gregson-Williams, who is obviously a very well-known composer, a film composer.
And you've worked a lot with him, right?
I have, yes. He was
X-Men Origins, Cowboys and Aliens, Chronicles of Narnia, the list goes on. Amazing projects.
Yeah, last two Shrek films, a bunch of Tony Scott movies.
Wow.
Harry has really been my mentor.
Right. But
the funny thing is that the reason I got in touch with him initially was because I had known him years earlier when I was a tiny kid going for after-school violin lessons at the local music school in the south of England where I grew up. And it so happened that he was actually a teacher at that same school. He has a choral background, and so he was a singing teacher. And I got to know him because I used to do the kind of summer camp thing that they always did every year, and which I attended 3 or 4 years in a row. And he was always one of the staff members there. So I knew him kind of from the ages of between sort of 9 and 12. I mean, I was 9 and 12, not him. And then lost touch with him, but then found out years later that he'd gone into film music. And so then he was the obvious name that sprang to mind when I thought, well, who can I get in touch with to ask for advice? And so we reconnected. Yeah, long story short, I ended up, he invited me out to LA, and I ended up working as his assistant for about 5 or 6 years.
So how many years have you been here?
Oh, that's a good question. Let's see, 14, 15 years.
So quite a while, quite a while. And how do you find LA compared to the UK? Do you get back to the UK much? I mean, obviously not now that we're in
not now situation,
but do you go back? Do you?
Yes, well, I try to. Funnily enough, this has been the longest, what with us being pregnant last year and now the pandemic, this is now the longest time that has gone by without my going back to England. So that's a bit of a wrench. I haven't now been back since Christmas 2018, which doesn't sound that long ago, but since moving here, I've gone back every year at least once. So it feels like a very long time for me.
I don't know about you, but whenever I go back to the UK, which I obviously still love, it sort of feels like a comfortable armchair.
Oh, yes. I know.
You know what I mean? It's like, I don't find that anything changes very much apart from my friend's kids just get older. But everything else sort of stays the same. I mean, again, you know, things have changed within the world, but, you know, prior to this.
I noticed little tiny details, like even something as thoroughly trivial and insignificant as the fact that about, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, going back and wandering around in London, getting on the tube, and everyone's using Oyster cards now, whereas I had, when I left, you still bought tickets.
Yes.
And so I felt very dinosaur-like, still buying a ticket rather than having an Oyster card. So the tiny details like that always strike me when I go back.
So, okay. So you've now become a very successful composer in your own right, having worked and assisted some amazing, you know, very famous composers, as you were saying, Harry Gregson-Williams, et cetera, et cetera. So tell us, what's your process as a composer? How do you go about creating? And have you found that being in isolation has changed the process at all?
Oh, well, being in isolation, that hasn't affected things at all, because I actually finished a project a matter of a couple of weeks before we all went on lockdown. And so I've not been working since then. But as to the question of how the process works, it slightly depends on the project, but there are one or two kind of principles that I try to stick to, one of which is that when I start, I always try to begin by writing something that is away from any visuals, any picture. I always think that it's important to have a strong musical idea in place before you start scoring specific scenes. There's a great temptation, I always find, to sort of leap straight in and start scoring scenes straight away, particularly because one's usually working under very tight time constraints. So, you know, you think to yourself, oh God, I've only got X number of weeks to do this. Quick, no time to lose. Scene one, go. And the danger of that, I find, is that you end up sort of scoring just sort of moment to moment without a kind of overarching sense of the whole thing. And the last thing you want is to end up with a score that just consists of a series of unconnected pieces of music. So this project, for example, to use as a specific example, this project that I've just finished, Future Man.
Yes, I want to hear all about that. That's for Hulu, isn't it?
Hulu, yes.
Yes, indeed. Tell us about Future Man.
Yeah, well, Future Man is a sci-fi comedy, which is co-created by Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg. It's a sort of, it's a kind of loving homage to 80s sci-fi. So it's chock full of references to sci-fi of that era and, you know, sci-fi tropes of that era. And it's very funny and very clever and sort of weird in all the best ways. And when I was starting out on that, before I'd written anything to picture, before I'd scored any particular scene, I spent a few days just writing the main theme. And only once I'd done that did I go in and sort of pick out a few key scenes which I thought where we would want to hear that theme. And that kind of working that way gives you a kind of, well, that gave me a kind of framework around which to hang the rest of the score. And it meant that there was a strong idea at the center, sort of tying everything together. So that sort of gives you an idea of vaguely how I at least try to approach a project like that.
So for youngsters listening, or for anyone listening really, who may want to get into composing and sort of understand and learn the process, what tips of advice would you give them based on how you've gone about the success that you've achieved?
That's a tricky one, you know, because frankly, everyone that I know in the business has a slightly different story to tell about how they got where they are. That, you know, some people started out in a band, some people had a more classical background like me, some people will have gone through you know, like a film music program at college or university. Others didn't. I didn't. I just went dive straight in and kind of learned on the job. But there isn't really a single right way. But there's one piece of practical advice that I learned quite early on, once you're doing this for a living, is to never throw anything away. And that's something that's been quite valuable to me.
Expand on that a little bit more.
Yeah, well, so if
not being a hoarder.
But what I mean is that if you...
I know, I'm teasing you.
No, you sort of have to be a hoarder in a strange sort of way, in the sense that if you write something on a project and the filmmaker or the director or whoever it is rejects it for any reason, doesn't think it's quite right for the thing that you wrote it for, which happens all the time, you know, that's just part and parcel of that goes with the territory. You should never throw away that thing that you wrote. Always keep it somewhere, because invariably you will find a use for it further down the line. And it doesn't even have to be it was rejected. It could just be that, well, I mean, on Future Man, there's a good example. I wrote a theme for, when I was working on the pilot episode, I wrote a theme for a particular scene. Ended up being far too long for the scene when the scene was eventually edited down to its final length. And when I tried to edit the music down to fit the scene, it just didn't work. You could just hear the joins everywhere. And eventually I had to just say, okay, that's not working. I'll have to start to try something new. But the important thing is to keep what you wrote, because then you find, because I found, I think two episodes later, that theme was perfect for some for a different scene in a later episode. And it ended up being one of the key themes in the show. So that's something that I've always found useful to keep in mind, to always keep things, even if it doesn't work out the first time.
Fair enough. No, I think that's good advice. So obviously, I definitely want to touch on the fact that you were Emmy nominated, which is fabulous, in 2016 for the Netflix DreamWorks animated series Turbo Fast. So animation, when you're creating music for animation, is that a different process? I mean, that must be quite fun, isn't it?
It is fun. It tends to be a little more labor intensive than... That's a huge generalization. It's not.
That's interesting. In what way? For what reason?
Well, because in animation, it tends to be the case that you're trying to hit more things happening on screen as a general rule. There's less call for just sort of underscoring something and staying out of the way. So you can often find, as an example, one of my favorite episodes of that series that I did, and I think it's second season, they did as that series wore on, they got more and more inventive and experimental, and they did a brilliant parody of the old Looney Tunes cartoons.
Oh, right, okay.
They did a really fantastic parody of the Roadrunner, Wile E. Coyote cartoons. And so I got to write music in that style, which was...
Oh, brilliant.
Just a joy, because, you know, I loved that stuff when I was growing up. And I still think that the music in those cartoons is just extraordinarily good.
I used to be addicted to those, actually.
The thing is that writing that kind of music is incredibly painstaking. I mean, you spend hours and hours on perhaps, you know, 13 seconds of footage, because everything has to be so precise and you're having to hit things.
That's so interesting. I hadn't ever thought of it like that. Yeah. I sort of thought, oh, well, maybe it's easier writing on animation because you're watching a visual. But no, I can see that it has to be completely time-coded to the nth degree now that you're explaining it in a sort of...
Getting the chance to do it myself, it just brought home to me the incredible skill of those guys that did the music in those original. Carl Stalling, who did music for all Looney Tunes, and also Scott Bradley, who did the music for the old Tom and Jerry shorts. They didn't have anything like the sort of technology available to us. You know, their version of writing everything to fit the picture was much more primitive than what we have. So the job that those guys did, I mean, it's just extraordinary. But yeah, animation is great fun. I always regarded it as a kind of sort of litmus test for your skills, really, as a composer, because you really, I mean, it's one thing to be able to create cool sort of moods and textures and sound worlds and so on, but to do animation, you really have to be able to write. So but it is a lot of fun. And once it's written, it's great fun.
So if you could work on any particular film or TV show or with any director, who would be your sort of, oh my God, I'd love to work with him or her. Is there a director that really inspires you?
Well, I mean, there are so many names that could spring to mind. And that's the kind of question that the answer to which changes from week to week. But lately, I've been thinking a lot about things like Black Mirror.
Oh, okay.
I'm very drawn to that sort of what you might call sort of thoughtful sci-fi genre. And I've been a fan of Charlie Brooker for ages. You know, I've got all his books, and you know, I used to devour his screenwriting programs. And so I would love to get the chance to work with him. And there's another director that I quite admiring recently is Alex Garland.
He's British.
Yes, I believe so. Yes. I loved Ex Machina, which he made.
Yes.
And there's a TV series that has just come out, also on Hulu, I think, called Devs. I don't know if you've come across it, but it's...
I haven't.
Very, very good. Just finished watching.
Devs?
Devs, yeah.
Okay.
As in development.
Right. Okay.
It's very, very sort of weird and trippy, but brilliant and very sort of thoughtful. So that's what's been on my mind lately.
So sci-fi, sort of weird and wild and wacky.
Yeah. I mean...
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. I can see that. So when you were younger, were there composers that you sort of really looked up to that inspired you to be who you are today?
Yeah. If you, in terms of film music, well, there were two things that I loved as a kid. I mean, there were lots of things, but two main things, Star Wars and James Bond.
Okay.
And so John
Williams. Good choices.
John Williams and John Barry.
Okay.
Those would have been the two composers. John Williams is obviously... I mean, an absolute no-brainer for a film composer. I mean, he's the gold standard. I mean, anyone who goes into film music,
absolutely.
He is one of those people that, you know, if it could be said, very broadly speaking, that film composers can be divided either into, they're either transplanted classical composers or transplanted, pop performers. He would be the sort of supreme example of the classical type. You know, if you were to pick him up and put him down 100 years ago, if he'd been born 100 years ago, he would have been one of the great symphonists. You know, he would fit seamlessly into that world. He's obviously the gold standard. And then John Barry, who wrote most of those classic James Bond scores in the 60s and 70s and 80s, I can vividly remember that the opening scene of You Only Live Twice made a massive impression on me as a kid. That's the scene... The capsule in space scene.
Okay, yes.
You know what I mean? Where the Spectre rocket comes up and the nose cone opens up and swallows up.
Yeah. I actually do know what you mean.
And the music that Barry wrote for that, well, it blew my tiny mind when I was, 9 years old or whatever, when I first saw it. And it was, I've always described that as being one of my own earliest awarenesses of film, what film music could do and its sort of power. So those two would be, John Williams and John Barry would be the main ones. And I also have a lot of time for figures like Jerry Goldsmith and Alan Silvestri.
Moving on to another question. Now, the podcast, as you know, is called For Love and Music.
Yes.
And I like to ask a couple of love questions that I throw into the mix. So now, has love ever sort of guided you to make an unexpected decision in your career?
Nothing springs to mind specifically, but maybe I can sort of flip it around and say that in an indirect sort of way, my career helped me make a decision, as it were, in love. And the reason I say that is that I met my wife through work colleagues. In other words, if I had not come to LA to do film music, I would never.
Is she in music as well?
She is. Well, she studied film scoring as well.
Right.
She came out of the Berklee College program in Boston. And she sings in one of the choirs in LA in the Pacific Chorale.
Lovely!
And but she was at Berklee at the same time as people that I ended up working with, and so I was introduced to her through them. So if it hadn't been for work, I would never have met her. So I don't know whether that's
a perfect answer.
Okay, good.
It love and music are combined.
Exactly.
Right. Same with me. I loved LA and I always dreamt of living here, but had I not fallen in love, I probably wouldn't have ended up making the move.
There you go.
Right. So, things happen. So have you got a romantic song that resonates with the two of you or just with you?
Well, yes. Okay. So prepare yourself for a soppy wedding story.
Oh, go on. The more soppy, the better.
It's that we got married a little over 8 years ago in Kenya.
How come Kenya?
Oh, my wife is South African.
Right, okay.
And we decided to pick somewhere that was kind of sort of halfway between.
I've been to South Africa. I think it's the most beautiful country. I've never been to Kenya, but would absolutely love to go.
Also gorgeous. I mean, one falls in love with the place.
Yes, I'm sure.
But yes, we had a intimate little thing. There were maybe 12, 15 guests or something. And the whole ceremony, the dinner, the reception was all outdoors in the Masai Mara in Kenya. And towards the end of dinner, it started raining. And we sort of all danced the evening away around the fire in the rain. And we chose as our song for the first dance, You Belong to Me, which is written in the early 50s. Specifically the version sung by Patti Page, which is the one that we used. And there's a line in this song that goes, see the jungle when it's wet with rain. And which obviously when that became so utterly fitting in the circumstances when we were all dancing around the fire and it's literally raining in the jungle. Yeah. So ever since then, that's had a tremendous meaning for us.
I think that's a beautiful answer. You know, I've had people on the show and I've asked them this question, people who have been married not so long ago and they can't remember the song that they danced to at their wedding, or they can't remember. It's really funny. And they're like, oh gosh, I'm going to get into trouble now. So that's a perfect answer.
Yeah, well,
beautiful, romantic answer. So, okay, a final question for you. Where would you like to see yourself in 5 years' time, coronavirus aside?
Well, hopefully not still in quarantine.
Please God for all of us. Health and happiness for all.
Yes, indeed. I never know what to say to that question. I other than just more of the same, please.
More children.
Hopefully with many more cool projects under my belt.
And more babies.
Oh, I don't know about that. We're only 6 months in. It's a bit
okay.
Early. I'm still stuck in a blizzard of nappies, and it's too early to make that call.
He's a good boy.
He is a good boy. Yes, he's lovely. He's an absolute joy.
So maybe no set decision on any more children, but clearly leaps and bounds with film and TV and et cetera, composing wise.
Oh, definitely, yes. And also, frankly, I want to get back at some point to writing for the concert hall as well. I mean, I always, before moving out here, I had this sort of romanticized idea that I'd be able to, writing music for film and TV would be my sort of main job, but I'd be, on the side, I'd be able to continue writing string quartets and symphonies and things. But, you know, how naive was I? This job, you know, is so all-consuming, you know, when you're in the middle of a project, there's no time for anything else. So, I don't know, it would be lovely to think that at some point I could write something for the concert hall again. But that's, you know, main focus will continue to be film and TV for now.
Well, I can't wait to hear what's next. And it's been just such a pleasure and so lovely speaking to you. Congratulations on your little bundle of joy who arrived recently. And thank you for being a guest.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Absolute pleasure. So thank you to all the For Love and Music listeners. Keep on tuning in and you'll be hearing from me again very soon. Stay safe and healthy, everyone. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to For Love and Music with Tara Joseph. For more information, you can check out at For Love and Music Official on Instagram, at For Love and Music Official on Facebook, and also visit www.jamartistgroup.com/podcast.